Thank you, France. There's so much that we can delve into, but I'd love you to start with the Gate and McKenzie accusation that the problem is the ANC and the DA.
Well, I mean, it depends what question you're trying to answer. You know, what I told you is going to happen is that no one will again be at, in the fullness of time, in the Western Cape, the process might be slower, and elsewhere, Mpumalanga, the ANC might remain dominant. But where we're irrevocably going is a position where no one of the great political parties is going to have executive control over any constituency in the country. And instead, they're going to have to come together and try and strike some sort of a deal as best as they can. You might look at that in the worst examples of it and say it's terrible and can never work, like Johannesburg, but you must weigh that against where it did work, partly here in the Western Cape, about, I think, 30 municipal districts in the country governed by coalitions. You've heard of none of them because it kind of works pretty well. But the point isn't so much what the politicians are going to do. Like I told my mining client, who was very intrigued by this idea of a government of national unity, and would the politicians create better policy? You must turn the locus of control around in the coalition future. They won't do very much of anything at all, other than, fortunately, perhaps ensure that we evade the risk of national suicide, which would be, if we saw at this moment, which we might well have seen, given a 70% youth unemployment rate, the growth of one powerful populist organization, because it would surely wreck the country. So there's a sense of the donor community. Everyone must get together and form a new majority and build these. It's totally to misunderstand how the country is changing. And the question, in fact, is not are the politicians problematic? There's some very brave and great politicians and should be grateful to them, and others aren't that great. The way to think about your future, if you're going to be successful here, is how in that situation of these parties can you, as a private actor, exert the influence to ensure that your material circumstances improve? And people who understand that and do that are going to do amazing. We are just becoming, and there'll be a few enclaves at last, perhaps for a very long time, we're becoming an African emerging market, a normal African emerging market. If you've done business in Turkey or the Middle East or parts of South America, it's not in the main a Western European province with a liberal democratic order. There's strong aspects of that, grateful. The question is not, are the politicians going to be wonderful? The question is, how are you able to exploit the situation now on the way to being created to ensure that yourself, your country, your business, your broader community, and everything around that sees its material circumstances improve as far as possible? In South African communities, remember I said it's fragmentation. Communities that do that well, and obviously not just for themselves, because the people who live down the road in shacks and sand dunes, and they are very important too, because they're definitely going to have a say how Hermanus evolves. Communities that do that well are going to be some of the most exciting emerging markets of the next 20 or 30 years. And communities that fail to understand that are going to have a very hard time.
Doesn't that, though, play to smaller groupings? Independence for the Cape, KZN, even parts of that, if you're going to have these pockets that will be self-sufficient?
That's the point. It might not be as dramatic as we will hear from the independence people later. It might not be as dramatic as independence of the Cape, a sort of moment is reached in which, I don't know, the N1 is ceremoniously closed and, as Gayton said, you need a passport to visit your family. But in a de facto sense, the Cape is already becoming independent. People who live here, property can be traded in foreign currency. Most of your wealth, if you listen to Magnus, is probably already foreign currency denominated, despite what you own here. You private access to resources and security and the like. You are very far down the road of having become independent already. And the fragmentation I described for you, it's really a test on the decision of union in 1910. That throughout that 110 years and a bit to today, it's been very difficult to govern the central South Africa. And it, people who've tried have generally had to resort to force and non-democratic means. And that's how we got these big majorities. And the ANC was a hangover of that. That's now fading as lived experience of the present overwhelms historical memory. What's going to happen to us is the politics is going to reflect what the reality of our society is like. And then to make it real, maybe this. In 10 years' time, the biggest political party in the country will have 25 or 30% of the vote, probably a party of people who live on the urban periphery, maybe something we trace back to the ANC of old. The second biggest is going to have 20 or 25%. It's the people who live in the middle of the urban centers. And there'll be a radical left fringe of 15, because we'll still have quite a lot of inequality. And so we've got 25 and let's say 35, that's 60, and 15's given us 75, and there's 25 left, and that's going to be 2, 3, 4, 5% parties, some language, ethno-nationalist, Christian right. At the bottom, there'll be, you know, some weirdness and anti-vaxxers to provoke someone in the audience. And that's the country that we are going to become. And if you sort of rail against that and you keep doing what a lot of party donors do, that will we get someone in the union buildings with the power and insight to lead us to greatness? We've never really had that in the union buildings, and we're probably not going to create it now. But what we're going to become is going to be perfectly okay. And it's probably going to work out pretty well. And if sensible, and it's not a de jure federation, just that exactly as your lives are here in Hermanus, they are a little bit different from mine when I live in Johannesburg, in the ruins of Johannesburg, as we. But it is different. Those differences will widen. Some areas will be more competitive than others. We'll retain the skills, we'll retain the capital. If you think of the macro South Africa, it won't look amazing. Probably not collapse and warfare and revolution. But if you take this area that you're in and parts of the Cape around you, I'm very sure you live in one of the world's most exciting emerging markets of the next 30 years. And that will remain true regardless of what happens in the north of the country. And if the north fails, it will be even more exciting because you'll dump so much additional capital and skill. And if the north of the country doesn't fail, or even if it succeeds a bit, it's just going to lift what you've got going here already. So I don't, and there are dangerous people, there are dangerous downsides, and they are plausible. I'm not saying it's impossible. But on the balance of probabilities, I think it looks better than some of the stuff that you read.
It was a pretty instructive point that you made, that when the country was growing at 5%, doesn't matter who you were quite happy with what's going on. But when we look at the requirements for being a politician in the future in this dispensation you've spoken about, number one has got to be the ability to negotiate properly, not to be sitting in a position of my way or the highway. Now, what we've been hearing a lot of this morning is that that's the way the DA seems to negotiate. You know these guys much better than the rest of us. Share some insights.
Yeah, I'm wary of that because you become, I mean, you know things. And I think across the oppositions and in the ANC, I mean, what the Treasury is doing in the ANC is actually very brave, not to turn to. They know they're going to lose. They're not, believe me, they if you, them here and turned off the cameras, they tell you the outlook is far worse than any of you under, because they are losing. You're not really losing. The ANC is, the country's not necessarily losing. It's a difficult place. The ANC is losing. It's very dull. But even there, they're people that do their best. I think it's always going to be very difficult. There's a problem with the idea that we pack all the opposition parties together into a bloc, and we call them the Moonshot Pact, and we give them some money, and then because they're all the same, they're going to work together. Sometimes they can, and then places that have the DA and IFB and Natal do well together, but it can't work because you, by putting parties together that have things in common, they are competing over voters, and they must. And if you're terribly wealthy and fund one of these parties, you might be able to say to its leader, well, you really shouldn't worry about the by-election result in Hartebeestfontein because there are bigger issues at stake. But if you're the leader of a political party, the by-election result is very important, and you do need to win. And coalitions might therefore sometimes work better between parties that have less in common rather than more in common. When the segue back to this, the ANC, everyone seems to have at about 40 at the moment, but for much of the past 18 months, it was at 46 and 47 and can go back to that. And if it gets back to that, it surges in the 3 weeks before an election, can still get near 50 and cobble together some kind of government or maybe a maze on the upside and cling with its fingernails to 51. If it does that, it's a temporary thing and we'll go back to the position that we're in again now in short order. But if it doesn't do that, and if it's at 40 and you're sitting in that ANC camp and you're looking around, you see in the DA another serious political organization. And if you're a party that has very little support, you can sometimes behave in a wild fashion and your small number of supporters become hysterically delighted to see the show. But if you're a bigger party with 20 or 30, 40% of the vote and you behave in a wild manner, you're going to lose a lot of support. And the DA cannot and should not try and grow beyond the urban center that it now commands of the established multi-generational middle class, which, by the way, means in this election, the DA's vote is going to be 30% white and 30% black and 30% colored and then everything else. And the ANC, because it's done so badly, is never going to win back the confidence of the established middle class without replicating the growth it did 15 years ago, which it can't do because it's lost the ability to do anything. And Gayton's description of it was quite good this morning. Someone said to me, which is a great chap and was absolutely right and shows the society that Gayton is a bit uncouth. But that's the story of fragmentation, because that is a real part of the country. But the DA is not going to break onto that urban periphery of the potentially aspirant middle class. And if the DA's block is going to be 25 and the periphery 35, the two coming together in the fullness of time is a possibility. And people like it. It's also very dangerous. If it happens now, it's extremely dangerous. Because the ANC will make the offer of a government of national unity in order to draw in the DA, to blend all the colors into one and make the DA jointly responsible for government. And in 2029's election, the DA will lose the ability and the moonshot block to campaign against the ANC. So watch that when it comes. But the point, Alec, is this idea that you put all the people that are the same together and they're going to work together and it's going to work in negotiations just cannot take all. Donor world doesn't seem to pay attention to that. Much greater prospects of future coalitions working is if in the fullness of time, the people who have the votes in the established middle class and the people on the periphery find their way to each other, they might command a national majority. Even if that doesn't happen, and I don't think we should aspire to that to happen as the only route to salvation, the fragmentation outcome that I set out for you makes for a perfectly viable and successful society for decades.
It's almost like it's a bit of a preview for what we're going to hear a little later from David Ansara, who's talking about state-proofing yourself. we've got to, I'm taking from you, we've got to change our mindsets. We've got to get out of this one-party state that we've had in South Africa, well, for many generations, and to realize that coalitions are a very different form of government.
And I wonder if it's going to last, that people will, 500 of them will come to a meeting to hear what the politicians say they're going to do, or whether the change that's now upon us will get all of us to a point where we kind of know what they're going to do. And it is important, and it's some of us will think it's more of a hindrance than but realize that inside the kind of system, a fully free society, without a central authority, people don't want central authority all the time. It's very dangerous to have central authority in an unequal society. You get into really serious trouble. Might, in the fullness of time, start to reach a point where the politicians are, and I don't deride them and say they're hopeless and so on. Very important people that often do a lot of good, but that what they do is not of definitive importance to what's going to happen in the community that I live in. And I think if you're able to do that, you're probably going to have a very successful future. Yeah, and if that sounds harsh, you're probably better off in Canada, where the state will think for you and tell you what you're allowed to do and how many dogs you're allowed to have and what they're allowed to eat and where they're allowed to walk. But I don't think that's, I think some of that's already blown over the ocean.
But what remains here are tough people, and I think they're going to do really well.
Yeah, that's very un-South African, what you've just described now in Canada. Could we move to the floor now?
Hi, thanks so much for your talk. I wanted to ask about, so you speak about some of these big macro geopolitical things and how we're quite well positioned, but there's also the structural inequality, the education and health reform. And I just wanted to find out, with moving to a coalition future, what do you think, in terms of how the cogs of government actually work in politics, what are the chances of actually getting policy change so that a different healthcare future and education system are a possibility, because that also would be key to determining the future?
It will be much easier to do it in a coalition world than in the world we've come from. Anyone who's tried to negotiate rail with Pravin Gordhan, now retiring, free up railways as he goes, we'll know that in the coalition world, where no one's in charge, very skillful private actors will be able to win far greater concession. And the extent to which we address those problems will therefore depend probably less on the politicians that are elected, but on how third-party influential actors manage their politician. And success is plausible. I've said some of the capital to start rebuilding is here already. The skills are sitting here, some of them. You might, if it had been 30 or 40 years ago, many of you wouldn't be in the country anymore if the similar situation played out. Tech allows you to stay after wealth offshore, all of that. You can work for clients all around the world from the beach over here. You can do all of that. And just to give you a sense of possibilities, if you, which is, you can't really do, but just pretend that what the ANC started in 1994, the growth, was sustainable and would have continued had we not seen the financial crisis and everything that followed. Had we just stayed on that track, the unemployment rate today would probably be just on 10%, and it's actually 34%. And so you can change the country very quickly if mainly now third-party influencers do the best they possibly can out of the government structures that flow from this election.
So I see a bit of a almost inverted parallel between the Mexican state giving up their monopoly on violence to drug cartels and ours, conversely, almost giving it up to private security firms. Obviously, private security firms are a much better choice than violent cartels, but are there still, if any, negative implications to this giving up of the monopoly on violence?
In theory, I mean, it's the middle class has thought you have to seek security. You can't sit there and think, well, you know, theory, this, there are risks. The middle classes did it on private security, but poor communities did what you describe of South America. The lynching mobs that burn, yeah, lots of people every year for stealing cell phones in poor communities around the coast. So both have, in a sense, had the same response. You needed to get beyond the control of the outside of, you needed to take the monopoly back from the state. The state was so ineffective. You didn't do it, you'd be murdered. The great risk of that. So one side does it private. I don't think that's a real risk to security, particularly where it's sort of diverse competition. And you know, sometimes some of the old sort of ANC Marxists sort of imagine, I don't know, security firm X sort of marching a column on the union buildings to take over the state. You can tell them that that no one other than you would really want to try and govern the country, so you. Perfect. Looks terrible from where we sit. Definitely don't want to do it. And in poor communities, it's terrible violence. So there it already is the case of what you described.
Given your scenarios that you sketched out for the country and the Western Cape post these elections, what is your prognosis for KZN?
So you've spoken about polling a bit. And I've listened, and I chair a polling group, the Social Research Foundation. You must understand what you see in the. It's all right. Bill mentioned, I don't want to get him wrong, ANC 13, MK 34 in KZN. 2 weeks before that, we had MK at 20 something, the ANC at 20 something. It's all right. It's all telling you the same thing. Vast erosion of ANC support and vast rise of MK support. And 6 weeks ago, the ANC was at 40% in KZN. And now, you know, something near 20, we've got 6 weeks to go before the election. It will change again. And there's some polling groups that tend to get the DA and in the sort of the 18, 19 levels. If you know what they're perfectly legitimate exercises, but if you understand them and what they're testing and how, and historically, you might say there's nothing wrong with that number, but it is actually 23 or 24 or 25. And media reporting of this stuff is so bad that it should, I mean, should almost not should almost be bad because it creates. I spend a lot of time reversing clients out of positions they formed on the country, the economy, the rand, the politics, because of what they read in a B-grade newspaper. Written by a teenager with a three-year degree from Rhodes, chased by an editor who says the story about the shark biting the man on the beach got more clicks than your story about Enoch Budget, so you need to up the game. At the moment, I mean, our latest stuff, I mean, that's all I can give you is the DAMK, the ANC are rivaling, and the IFP are rivaling each other in the same kind of bandwidth in KZN, and they're going to have to strike a deal out of that. There is going to be an effort to deregister MK. The ANC is going to do that later this month. They're confident they'll succeed. I don't know what they know, but I don't quite see that happening. And beware also that MK is the shooting star at the moment. It's got 6 weeks to go still. And whether it has the substance in order to sustain itself also remains to be seen. But the numbers you read now, there's no polling group that's wrong and way off. And polling is actually historically, even in European and American elections, much more accurate than B-grade media analysis suggests. It's always almost right. Science is now that good.
But between the numbers we have now and those on the 29th of May,
in fact, the way of putting it is that what we're seeing in the numbers in these last few months are changes as dramatic as everything that we saw in the preceding 20 years of South African politics.
And we've still got 6 weeks to go. So it can change a lot. But what is almost absolutely certain is the change is headed towards the fragmentation that I described for you. And ultimately, if the one has a few points more than the other, the environment you confront, people who live here and invest, will be, I'm confident to tell you, that's likely going to be the environment you will be investing in. Okay.
Thank you, Frans. John Steenhuisen yesterday spoke about the Doomsday Coalition. Spoke about it being a binary election, choice between good or bad. Was he just fear-mongering? Because you seem to be a lot calmer and more relaxed about it.
John's I don't think he's a good guy, and I don't think he's fear-mongering. If this is how things can play out, it's not the likelihood, and we can go into some of the reasons for that, the good reasons why it's not likely. Could actually even be the best thing to happen. The ANC and the EFF get together. The first thing they'd have to do is ensure we do not get to another free election. Because I told you about the natural immune response in our political system, that as you govern badly, there's a near almost immediate, on a short lag time, consequence. And the shock of the ANC and the EFF getting together and what it does in markets and the currency to investment levels, living standards will be decimated. They now have to carry that for 5 years, the next election, and survive. If you ask voters and do some other things, what happens if Mr. Ramaphosa leaves and you vote again? That takes, in our work, and I was just in the back, I didn't quite hear what Bill said, it takes about 10 percentage points off the ANC. So take Ramaphosa out, because he wouldn't probably stick around for this. The ANC at 40 becomes 30. You now have 5 years of relative economic devastation. The ANC and the EFF would be lucky to get 30% in the election in 2029, which is why, contrary to some ideas, it could be a strategy to force them together now and make them govern. To avoid another election, they must print money to create the desperate poverty through inflation to create the populism. There's battle-hardened civil society groups out there, know exactly what to do to stop that. Just fund them and they'll do it for you. It's sort of turnkey operation. You'll hear from David later. You'll hear from Anthea, I believe, this evening. That they can stop these sorts of things. To get past the money printing and the stopping, they'll have to do something to the judges. These guys can stop that too from happening. When you expose what they're doing to the judges, they'll have to shut down the media, which could also just move, you know, abroad and carry on. It's actually very difficult if you're the ANC and the EFF to join up and think that you're going to survive. You're probably not going to survive. You're probably going to get wiped out. Unless you can print and radicalize the population in 5 years, there's a chance they could do that. And then it falls apart. And that's the doomsday that John is correct to warn you about, because it might very well still happen. But it's not, on the balance of probabilities, the thing that will happen. And if it starts to happen, there are more than enough institutions and the like, free media, so important, things like this, that will stop. Stopping them will be easier than the challenge they would have to succeed. But the risk is obviously, 70% of young people don't have a job. Of course it can end badly. I just think it probably might.
You're in a very interesting position to sort of work with big business as well as the political parties and really report back to the man on the street. Other than our weekend finance minister, we haven't seen a lot of action from big business and a lot of skin in the game from these. What is your take on that? Do you think there's a lot of work being done behind the scenes, or are they just limp-wristed as we, all the entrepreneurs here, see?
Well, it's not their role, so they won't get involved. And they never have, and they probably never will, with exception. The Oppenheimer family before 94, but I mean, that was an exception. It might have been very influential, but that was an exception. Businesses will invest in terms of the environment created by the state, and The idea that business will get in and fix things is firstly just wrong, because it
it won't, and it perhaps even shouldn't, and where it does intervene, not always very, sometimes, but it might actually be better to tighten party funding laws so that very rich people cannot fund some of the adventures that they've been pursuing over the last few weeks. So the business way, get involved, and I don't think that's unusual or a great disappointment, or that it changes the outlook for the country fundamentally.
I'll ask you the last question. And there's $1.5 trillion, that $1.5 trillion in cash on balance sheets of companies. What's it going to take to unlock that, to get that pushed into the country? And it comes back to this argument of carrot and stick.
What it takes is firm move towards private rail and port operators. We see that in the Durban port. We'll see it if everyone plays this new coalition well. We'll see it on the rail well. That's the first thing it's going to take. The second thing is absolute certainty on property rights. And that means no national health insurance, which is nationalizing property rights. No new national social security fund, which is the thing that's being planned for after NHI, to take all your pensions and pool them in a pot and force you to continue contributing and then to distribute equally to everybody afterwards. None of that, certainly not expropriation without a compensation, as Ryzen Zanzi advocated for in the Daily Maverick earlier this week, which is, be careful what you wish for or give birth to. None of that. And every appointment is on merit, and every piece of procurement is on merit. And if you do those things, the world holds up. A foreign policy that seeks concessions from great global powers, growth rate will race back to 5% very quickly.
And government of national unity, would you put much credence in that possibility?
Yes, you should. If it was this week, that would be the offer. I actually thought, it's not always great at forethought. And 6 weeks ago, I thought it was at 45, 46, 47, which it was. And that's easy. A little bit of a surge at the end, 47, 48, rats and mice, former government carry on. Now that it's closer to 40, it can't do that. And a fear for some people in the cabinet is that Mr. Ramaphosa, who's already shown signs of trying to get out of a terrible job, might want to go. So now you've got to turn 40 into a win if you're the ANC. So how do you do that? This is what you say, is it's not really about the numbers after the election or the winners and losers, because it's really about the people. And we shouldn't really have been competing as aggressively as we did, because we all forgot about the people. And what we need to do now is come together and have a new national convention. And through that convention, could go on for months and months, find national consensus. And the national consensus will allow us to write a new national development plan. And I invite every party into the government, all of us together, and we're going to do this. It's going to take 3 or 4 years. We'll try and implement it before the next election and buys time. That's going to be the government. That could be, give you a feel of the government of national unity. Often it's very clever, because public opinion will be very confused about whether this is leading towards thinking this is the solution, which we might get back to that central authority that can rule us from Pretoria that we've never really had for 110 years, does it well. Markets will go dilly for it. The Rand will storm back to under 17 very quickly if it holds together. And DA strategists will have to think very hard about whether entering is the right strategic option, given that once inside, you will, within a few years, struggle to understand the difference between the opposition and the government. And obviously, the ANC will remain largely dominant. So that's the offer at the moment. And it's very clever. It certainly negates the risk of national suicide. We're not trying to fend off
a 70% populist left fringe that's going to print and destroy the country. We'll be grateful for that. But whether a government of national unity is a wise decision, whether you should rather put the ANC and the EFF together, turn inwards on each other, devour each other. Now, the ANC and the then coalition somewhere around Johannesburg, and it was very funny because the ANC sort of staged a protest, the posters saying that EFF has taken all that ended. I mean, the protest really is that they've stolen the corruption. And this is covered seriously by the state broadcast. There's ANC members protesting. And then they descended into a pitched battle in the debating chamber where one chap was alleged to have stolen the other cell phone in the melee. Put that together. Try and let it govern. And it's tough a country as what we are. That is a strategy that the broader opposition can consider to bring a much stronger centrist type coalition option around in 2029.
Franz Grenier, thank you.